Hey, welcome everybody back for another amazing episode of the Lime Boss podcast. I'm Heather Gray, aka the Lime Boss. I'm a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, and I help fast-paced women professionals who have digestive issues that they can't explain, brain fog that's crippling their day, and having no energy to spend time with their kids. Is it undiagnosed Lyme disease? I know it was for me. I help those folks get to the bottom of those symptoms instead of just throwing band-aids at symptoms. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Diane Mueller. She's one of my favorite persons on the whole planet. I mean, she's been my business coach, we're colleagues. We've worked together in the Lyme world. Like, she is just freaking brilliant. And then when she came out with her new podcast, the Libido Lounge podcast, you know, and I know you're probably guys thinking are like, Heather, you're the Lyme Boss podcast. Why are we talking about libido and sex? Because I'll actually let Dr. Diane explain that. But I'm trying to bring health and wellness to everybody. Yes, we do bring it in and we talk about Lyme and we can be more specific, but really these principles can be applied to anyone with any condition anywhere. And this information needs to get out. So, and I love talking about this stuff. Most of you don't realize that I actually was a passion and intimacy coach for 4 years myself and, you know, followed Dr. Data and, you know, Alison Armstrong and a lot of the same people that I know that Dr. Diane has, but she's way cooler than I am and made a podcast out of it. She's got a new practice around it. And then she's got a summit coming up called Solving Sexual Dysfunction Summit. And man, you talk about something that is so ridiculously needed, right? Because people aren't talking about dysfunction in the bedroom. It is so taboo. It's like a stigma, you know, so to bring this subject to light, it's a beautiful thing. Welcome everybody, Dr. Diana.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Heather. It's always so great to talk to you. Love when we get to do it over a kombucha or a meal, but here we are today on video. So we'll take what we can get. So thanks for having me.
You're looking mighty fabulous there. I love that Juicy Lounge you have.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, so why the pivot? Why, you know, why from Lyme doc to libido? You know, why are we talking about sex?
Yes, in some ways it's like so related. And there's a couple different ways that it's related. One, obviously, most people with Lyme, with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, all the various symptoms that oftentimes manifest with things like Lyme or mold illness, sex drive completely goes out the window in almost all cases of those things, right? So there is an element where low libido is a symptom and it is part of a picture that is oftentimes seen with other bigger chronic disease, you know, scenarios. So that's certainly one thing. But another thing that's interesting in some of the similarities between something like Lyme and libido is the taboo nature. Like, how many times people with Lyme disease have gone to their docs and everything lab-wise is normal and they're basically told there's nothing wrong. You know, it's in your head. And so it's almost like this taboo type of topic, right? That we both know that people are oftentimes really not made to feel safe or heard or understood or comfortable with talking about this. And I think I have a passion in my life for like the rebel nature of things and talking about things that are a little bit more off the standard kind of conversations that people have, because libido in that way is very, very, very similar. Libido in many ways is that phase, one of these things that is so taboo that there hasn't been a space to talk about it comfortably. And now we're seeing more and more and more research around the importance of a healthy sex drive and what that does for sleep and what that does for brain fog and what that does for healthy relationships and social isolation and on and on and on and on. That now I just have been seeing with like the research, I'm seeing that this is an important topic. And we're finally at a point where talking about sex is this thing that we can now do without it being so kind of in the corners, in the hush, or the things that you just maybe talk to your doctor about, or maybe talk to your best friend about, but nobody else.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. Like I told you, so I, you know, 4 years studied this topic myself. I have a funny history in a couple different industries that kind of makes me think a little outside of the box. And I couldn't get over every single episode. I'm like learning not one, but two, but three things. And I'm like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. It's just, it's absolutely incredible. And I love you're usually kind of short, succinct, but still entertaining. Like I absolutely love what you've been able to do with this topic. What is, you know, some of the kind of the favorite little nuggets, tidbits that you like talking about these days?
There's a few different things. I mean, one of the things that I think is really helpful to understand is how both similar and dissimilar we are with, as women versus men, in sexual orientation around how we go through the process of getting turned on, how we go through the process of, say, getting lubrication to our genitals, and what goes on in the brain when it's subjected to estrogen versus testosterone, for example. And, you know, we both love Alison Armstrong, like you mentioned at the beginning of this, and she does such a good job of explaining some of these types of scenarios. But one of the things is like the way estrogen affects the brain. If you look at MRIs and what actually lights up in the brain versus, say, testosterone, is there's much more like activity all over the brain at one time, creating this like diffuse awareness versus, say, testosterone, which is much more linear. And you can see these different changes, like I'm saying, in some of these brain images. And so from that standpoint, I think it tells us so much about estrogen dominance versus, say, testosterone dominant individuals and how we actually approach sex and sexuality. Because this is one reason, for example, that men typically don't need a lot of foreplay and typically are like, okay, well, I'm in the mood. Today was a stressful day. Let's, you know, go get it on so we can burn off this stress. And women are like, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about the kids and the groceries and today was hard and I just need to vent. And like, I need like hours of the sexy talk or the foot massage or whatever it is in order to get me revved up and in the zone. And that discrepancy, I think, is not talked about so much. So oftentimes there's this thing that will happen where man might approach woman and man might be like, oh wow, I'm getting the cold shoulder. And all of a sudden, like, I tried, she's not interested. And woman might be like, oh my gosh, like, he just expects me to be ready for sex after a long day in 5 to 10 minutes. So nobody's talking about how we function differently in this sphere. And I just think it's super important to begin to unpack this, because innately, like, we all have libido, we all have sex drive, but we are actually foundationally different depending if we are testosterone dominant or estrogen dominant.
Absolutely. I love talking about these differences because I love Alison Armstrong. You know, she's like, women just think men are, you know, hairy women behaving badly, you know, and oh my yes. God, I about pissed myself when I heard that. And yeah, I do look at him a lot of times and think that, and then realize, no, he is wired completely different than I am. And I'm sorry, when I say he, it is, I'm talking testosterone driven, you know, compared to estrogen dominant, you know, because it can go either way in the very fluid world we live in. I have a transgendered son, so I totally get all the confusion sometimes that it can be when we're talking about sex and sexuality. So I just wanted to put that out there first. But like, one thing I would really love for you to touch on deeper, especially since the majority of the people listening and the people who are going to be at the summit are going to be women, right? And I know, as a entrepreneur, right, I run a lot of masculine energy all day long so I can stay focused and get the job done. Now, I have a slight issue within transitioning into my feminine that will help turn my partner on and actually get me going. Because see, the sad part is when I still come at dinner at that very masculine energy and I'm like, why doesn't he want me? Why doesn't he desire me? Well, it's because I'm acting like I have bigger balls than he does. So to all of our women entrepreneur out there who have the same kind of issues, what do you suggest for stuff like that?
Yes, it's a really important question. And to start with the foundation of that question, I think we should talk about oxytocin and vasopressin and how these types of hormones actually impact drive and sexuality in both women and men. So oxytocin, a lot of people have heard of as like the love hormone or the cuddle hormone. It's released in high amounts when we orgasm, but more as estrogen dominant individuals. And, you know, I appreciate you bringing up the transgender thing. This conversation I'm talking about, knowledge-wise, mostly from cisgendered people, just, and I don't say that from an like a, you know, exclusion perspective, just from the perspective of this is the group that I have spent most time researching and studying and know. So I just want to speak from a place of experience. And so when I'm talking about estrogen dominance, right, and estrogen dominance in the brain and the impact of oxytocin. So if you are estrogen dominant type of individual, oxytocin is something that you will release at orgasm way, and you will respond to it way, way, way more than men because there's more receptors in the brain for oxytocin. So men have a tendency to have a different hormone that predominates orgasm, which is vasopressin. And so that's part, vasopressin is like this bonding almost that is also related to like bonding.
I never heard of that?
I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea. And like, not from the standpoint of you, but just from the standpoint of like, most people haven't heard of this.
No, that's what I'm guessing. I'm an educated practitioner. I'm like, how have I not heard of vasopressin?
Right. And vasopressin, like we think about it for other things. Like we think about it for like kidney function, but we don't think about it for like bonding, right? Vasopressin, we think about for certain things in medicine, but this part about bonding is really left out. And like with men and vasopressin, what winds up happening with vasopressin is that it also bonds them together in like figure out answers for things, like, you know, going into their sports game and winning and like that type of thing can also be like this vasopressin bonding type of experience, right? But for women, it's different. We have way more oxytocin related, and oxytocin, this is a vicious cycle that we can get into. And here's the cycle. Oxytocin is a hormone that, yes, we release at orgasm, but it is amazing for combating stress. So the more oxytocin we have, the more we begin to relax, calm down, shift out of that thing that happens because of how our brain lights up as women, where we're thinking about so many different things at once, and we are natural multitaskers because of the way our brain is oriented. And oxytocin helps to pull that us out of that and into the moment and the pleasure of the moment. Well, so we have this vicious cycle, right? Where it's like, well, stress will not make us tend to want to do the types of activities that we don't, that say help with oxytocin. And then we don't have the oxytocin to combat the stress. So oftentimes when it comes to things like intimacy and beginning to get oneself in the mood, kind of to answer your question, like, where do we begin? We're overwhelmed. We're in our masculine. We're coming home. We're tasking. This is where the longer foreplay and the longer embodiment practices really come in, because we want to get that oxytocin going. And so this is where it's like coming home and sitting on your couch with your dog for 10 minutes, if that's an option, and just cuddling and not doing anything, grabbing your kids, if you have young kids, and saying, hey, it's like cuddle puddle time with mom right now, right? Hugging your partner for a long, you know, 10 minutes, but something that is really going to help you drop into that oxytocin that is not about that intimate moment, right? We're not there yet. We need this longer foreplay to drop into that oxytocin and that pleasure center. So, and cuddling is like amazing for it. Petting animals is amazing for it. So it's a really just simple, like 10 minute activity. Like, you're home from work, it's a stressful day. If you can do it, 10 minutes, oxytocin activity. And then usually from the standpoint of like the rest of the evening, if you're going to have an intimate relationship with your partner, like right before, say, bed, oftentimes for busy couples, it's good to fit it in earlier in the evening because people get tired. But if you're going to have that later in the evening, then, you know, the thought is like, once you get that oxytocin going, how can you find little ways of flirting with each other, of like, maybe you're passing each other in the kitchen and, you know, you kiss each other on the cheek, or you give each other a little pat on the booty, or whatever it is, right? Just something there. There's that continual engagement, that foreplay. I'm here. I love you. And now those kind of things really help the woman to tend to get primed, especially when we've had long overworked days.
Absolutely. I love non-chemical, you know, that are healthier scents, like essential oils help, dancing helps, you know, Epsom salt baths help ground me and kind of dissipates that. But really what I'm hearing is sometimes it's just space and needed, not to have a structured, right, time. Women need to meander. We need to putter, right?
Yes. There is definitely benefit to the putter, for sure.
I know. If I've not had enough time, if I've gone days and days and days with no puttering time, like, I get a little out of whack and I just need to, and my husband knows now, he's like, did you get to putter today? I'm like, I did. It was great. I'm going to the meadow. You know, I love, you know, that's another Alison Armstrong thing. I love going to the meadow.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
Tell us a little bit about some of your, favorite speakers, topics that you have coming up on this summit.
Yeah, we have so many good people. So we have...
Tease me, Dr. D.
We have an amazing, amazing, amazing person called Alice Adams. And she, what I love about Alice is she talks to us about Kegels. And so some of sexual dysfunction has to do with, to say, pelvic floor not working correct. Maybe there's pain, maybe there's numbness, maybe there's vaginal atrophy from a woman's standpoint. And so many people are just taught to do Kegels. And it's just like, okay, well, squeeze your pee muscles, pretend like you're not urinating, right? And when you listen to her talk, one of the things she actually talks about is how many people are taught to do Kegels incorrectly. And that can actually be worsening the problem. So she takes people through exercise of actually learning how to do Kegels correctly. So that's a really cool one. I interview this amazing founder of this sexual massager company called Mystery Vibe, and they've actually gotten their sexual massagers at FDA approved medical devices. And what they're finding is, because they have about a dozen research studies across the world on their massagers, and what they're actually finding is they're finding pelvic pain reduction with 3 times a week use for 12 weeks. So they're finding that in women, they're finding support with prostate cancer, as far as helping with recovery post-treatment in men, a lot of other really interesting things. So that's using these sexual massagers. We're talking to relationship coaches. We're talking to other pelvic floor specialists that are really teaching how to gain more genital confidence, how to basically, because a lot of people, and we actually see research on this, a lot of people, especially women, have actually never gotten to know their own anatomy, right? We're never really taught to like how to actually look at yourself for the first time, or the value of this, or the fact that all vulvas are supposed to look differently and that's normal. And like, people think so easy to see like a flash of porn and be like, oh, that's what this is supposed to look like. And that's not true. So we kind of break down some of that from a confidence standpoint. We talk about how to have the right type of sex. I interview BB Brodska, and she has one of her theories is that a lot of times people, when they're not feeling aroused and like they have a sex drive, it's because they're not having the right type of sex, right? They're not having the type of sex that actually is making them feel filled up. So then we talk to relationship coaches about, well, how do you have those kind of conversations, right? If you have never talked to your partner about what is actually beneficial to you in the bedroom, let's say you have 20 years of doing it as one way and it's actually not working for you, how do you begin to have that conversation? And on and on and on and on. So I'll pause there.
So after you spoke with her, you put out a podcast on that topic.
I did.
Okay. I was like, this is sounding familiar. That was actually one of my favorite topics that you did. That was just so well done, because yes, I mean, like, the struggle is real. Like, you get your favorite car and you're excited. And then, after so long, that excitedness wears off. Like, we're just humans. It's human nature. And to be able to bring heat back into the bedroom, bring excitement and pleasure and curiosity. Like, I just love that topic. So I'll be interested to listening to her. That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah. It's really important stuff, because it's like, we do talk about hormones. We do talk about how to get in the mood. We talk about all sorts of things, right? I have Dr. Joel Kahn on there, and he talks about circulation. And it's a really important point, because so many times with men, we think erectile dysfunction and that circulation type of component with that, that's where we get a lot of the sexual dysfunction drugs for men, is based upon circulation, but also for women. Like, women really need circulation to help with proper lubrication. And so, and one of the things that Dr. Kahn talks about is how cardiovascular disease is oftentimes a first line symptom of, say, or I'm sorry, that libido issues is a first line symptom of cardiovascular disease. So, and sometimes men think about that, but for women too, it's like, oh, it's low sex drive could actually be a sign that maybe you have some plaque on your arteries. Maybe there's not as much blood flow. So we're looking, it's like, libido is very interesting, right? Because in some ways it's unique, standalone, say, imbalance, right? And in other ways, it's a symptom of that something's out of balance. And then we use it like we do other symptoms to figure out what is underlying that root cause that is actually driving that.
Oh, absolutely. It's something that I say quite often is no matter how common a symptom may be, it is never normal, right? It is always your body's check engine light, but we have normalized so much crap. You know, we've normalized ED, we've normalized dementia, we've normalized, it's crazy. When I talk to people, they're like, oh yeah, my grandma's got dementia, my grandfather's got Alzheimer's, you know, and they're like, And I'm like, no, this stuff can be prevented. This is not the way. And so it's yes. Beautiful that it's more than just not being able to get it up or, you know, not having a drive. Like it's usually a symptom of something else.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, just to relate it to back to the Lyme community and the chronic infection and chronic disease community, one of the things it's like, obviously when you're not feeling well and you're just trying to manage like surviving and working or not working, like wherever you're at with the severity of this, obviously you're not probably thinking about sex much. But one of the other things I hope you get out of this conversation is like oxytocin, these hormones that we're talking about are ways of helping manage your nervous system. We know with these types of diseases, like Lyme, like mold, like chronic illness, we know there's so much sympathetic nervous system activity. We know there's that fight or flight. We know there's all that adrenaline naturally. That's part of surviving, right? And so even if you're like, well, I can't work on libido right now. I don't even have time or the energy to take my kids to school or brush my teeth or the pain that goes with this sometimes, think about oxytocin. Think about like what you can do, whether it's cuddling with your kids, cuddling more with your partner, cuddling with your animal, to start actually bringing in more oxytocin as a way of self-regulating your nervous system, even if you can't get to the sexual intimacy part with where you're at on a healing journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So we're getting ready to wrap up. Is there any kind of any final nuggets that you want to drop on us before you leave?
I think the last thing to say is I feel like there's so much misunderstanding about what sex and what sexuality is supposed to look like, is supposed to be like. And you know, there's a lot of different reasons for this. Society, porn, like I mentioned, there's a lot of different reasons for this, right? Really innately, this is your own expression of what, you know, what your sexual being is. So that's going to look different for you as well as for somebody else. There's the concept of love language in that book by Gary Chapman that does the love language book and talks about these five different love languages. Same thing is true for sexuality. We have our sex languages, right? And these are the different ways that we engage intimately, that we get turned on, that we show our love, that we show our connection to another human being. And so I definitely encourage you to be curious, to follow your intuition, to learn and to work with me or other sex coaches or docs in order to learn how to have these kind of taboo conversations with a partner in a way that is helping you guys to get closer together. And come to my sex summit because we're going to talk about all of this and more. I hope you guys will be there. And I really thank you for helping me spread the word on this, Heather. It means so much.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always down for whatever you're putting out. And also, like I said, go check out the Her Libido Lounge podcast. Like you won't regret it. It's amazing. And then yes, go to the show notes and I'll have all the information on how to join the summit. So again, thank you, Dr. Diana. It's such a pleasure having you. And everybody else, make sure to have a healthy day. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share this episode. Even if you found one little piece of inspiring nugget in it, this is how we change people's lives. This is how people get better. This is how people get hope. So please make sure that you are liking, sharing, and subscribing. Stay tuned for the next episode. You're not going to want to miss it. And while you're at it, head to my website, thelimeboss.com, and make sure you download your free video series, Real Cooking for Real Life. Learn amazing, delicious meals in 20 minutes or less. Learn why and how we cook certain things that are toxin-free, free of contaminants, and how to get a delicious, healthy meal under 20 minutes. You're not going to want to miss out. That's thelimeboss.com.